previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
This is The Bladder Presents Summary Judgment, Episode 7 for Law & Order True Crime, The Menendez Murders, Season 1, Episode 8. Welcome back to The Bladder Presents Summary Judgment, Law & Order True Crime Edition. I am your co-host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am here, as always, with Tara Ariano. Hello, Tara.
Hi.
It is the finale. We have quite a lot to say about many things, but before we begin, the opening statement. Here's our episode summary per TV Guide. After the first trial ends with a hung jury and the DA refuses to offer the defense a deal, a second trial gets underway with Barry Levin joining the defense team. Political collusion between the DA's office and Judge Weisberg reaches an apex as Gil Garcetti fights to repair the office's reputation. When Judge Weisberg won't allow Lyle and Eric's family members to testify, it's up to Eric to once again recount the stories of abuse before the jury determines a verdict. Not exactly sure that this is what we saw. I wish we'd seen a little more collusion and...
Yeah.
A little less Eric, but we will get to that. Let's start with stuff that we did like about the episode, our star witnesses. So, kind of a lot about Lyle's love life behind bars, but I thought it worked for the episode, and some of the wardrobe in that segment worked for you. Tara, do you want to begin?
One of the women that we find out about in this episode is a woman named Ms. Shelton, who lives in Virginia and has been a phone pal of Lyle's. And I just noted that when they show up to her house to collect the tapes, because she recorded them, she's in a tragic slash extremely period accurate floral print turtleneck. I had those maybe a few years before this, probably like when I was still in high school, but you know, Virginia.
Yeah. She also has a line on TV when her spot is blown up by the media that I thought was laughable, and so did you, but in a good way. Should we get into that now?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. You know, when Lyle's not murdering people, he's a pretty likable guy.
I mean, I really did laugh out loud. That's why you had it in the aggravating factors as one of the bits that didn't work for you. But it really did make me laugh. And I think it's supposed to be funny.
No, it made me laugh, too. And I have to feel like that actually happened or they wouldn't included it. But on the other hand, it's not like there's no on the nose dialogue in this series. So hard to say. But we did enjoy it, at least. I also enjoyed on the Lyle managing to juggle some phone pals tip that when they're interviewing some other friend, quote unquote, of Lyle's, Barry Levin does not seem that bummed out that he blows up Lyle's jailhouse Lothario spot by mentioning that Lyle's engaged to Anna Erickson. And Leslie's like, oh, do you mind? Because the woman that they're talking to, who is not Anna Erickson, ends up having taped Lyle and is mad that she's not the only one who's talking to Lyle and basically sells him out. And it becomes a serious thing at the second trial. But he's sort of like, he's more interested in not like starting shit, but he just doesn't seem to care. Leslie's like, can you shut up? And he's like, what? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lyle did marry Anna Erickson. They got a divorce in 2001. He is currently married to someone else. FYI.
Well, we'll get back to that as well.
Yes.
So we also get Eric having to shoulder all of the testimony. Lyle doesn't testify in the second trial, which, by the way, this seems like a bad call, but okay. since they've spent the entire series letting us know how fragile he is. So, you know, this might not be my move, but you know, at the same time, I'm not a lawyer, but
yeah, I think their rationale is that if Lyle doesn't testify, the tapes that I mentioned earlier can't be introduced. Right. So they have to put it on Eric, who's like, put me in, coach. Like, really?
Yeah. But then the end of his testimony is like, he describes the events in not a lot of detail. And the last thing he says is like, it was a mistake. So then Weisberg rules that they can't use imperfect self-defense as their, as the basis of their justification, I guess. And I agree with him. If he's saying it's a mistake, then it wasn't imperfect self-defense. You're supposed to be arguing, I assumed, or I would assume, that you thought your life was in imminent danger and you, you know, your actions were maybe not the way to go, but it, you wouldn't necessarily say it was a mistake afterwards. And I also don't think they think it was a mistake based on everything we've seen. So anyway.
Well, and are we sure that that's, was the ruling definitely because he said it was a mistake? Because I wasn't sure what we were supposed to think of his much more elliptical seeming and like half-ass testimony this time around. Yeah. Like he was still crying because Eric, but it also seemed like he, like his heart wasn't in it almost. And like it sort of petered out at the end. And I got the sense that the first time around, he was much more convincing, at least to the judge, vis-a-vis rational or not, feeling like his parents were going to kill them.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I don't know if it was only on the basis of that line that it was all, that defense was thrown out. But that to me, that's the last thing that happens in the previous scene. And then that's Weisberg's ruling. So I assumed that was
right. Yeah. I'm conclusion we're supposed to draw. Not attorneys. So definitely, definitely at us at Blotter Presents or visit us on the forums previously.tv/forums to tell us everything we don't know, which is a lot. So just keep it to a few bullet points.
Yeah. I'll also add here. And this is sort of there's a general comment about the way that culture has changed. Honestly, even just like in the last 8 weeks since the start of this series to now, like,
yeah,
how, I mean, I don't need to say it. We've been saying it, you know, for the past several weeks as all of these revelations have come out about, you know, in the wake of the Harvey Weinstein story. But in addition to, you know, greater understanding of how what the cycle of abuse is and how it works and how epidemic sexual abuse is. In addition to all of that, last week, Anthony Edwards published a post on Medium describing the sexual abuse that he survived from an acting teacher who he worked with as a kid or as a young adolescent named Gary Goddard. And you can Google it. And he says, you know, he was not the only one in his peer group that he knew of. And one of the kids that he knew was like sexually assaulted. I believe he used the word rape. By this guy who has denied it, but like, it's just impossible not to see this story differently now than I did at the start of it, honestly. And the fact that Edwards is playing this guy who's completely dubious about all of the claims that the Menendez brothers are making is so much more interesting given his own real story. It just brings it gives it so much more extra textual meaning. In the finale, like it's horrible, but at the same time, like it's like strangely fascinating how relevant this ended up being.
Yeah, in a bunch of different ways, actually, and we'll get into that a little more in the aggravating factors section because you know when they're putting this series together, I don't think obviously there's no way for them to know how this news and this topic would be cresting, I guess.
Right.
Alongside when it's airing. But there are certain things that land more effectively. And then as a result, certain things that the show does that undercuts that like accidental effectiveness. But we will get into that later. For now, I must mention how like fascinating I find Eric's hair in this last episode. Yeah. It's like getting progressively larger and curlier and poofier and more like an inverted pyramid. I just like could not stop staring at it. It's like the Brandon Shelf on 90210.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. He's evolving. His hair is evolving from like more individual curls to the Brandon Walsh.
Yeah. He really did have great hair in real life too. Let's move on to the sick burn by Marta. There's a scene in which Jose's mother wakes from a bad dream. They're in a hotel room, I guess, just sort of,
I assumed,
things out. Yeah. Marta sort of gets in bed with her to comfort her and like asks about her dream. And then there's a pause and she says, "And did you ask God for forgiveness for making Jose the man that he was?"
And then we find out at the end of the episode exactly what that means, which is Marta tells Leslie that Jose's mother sexually abused him when he was a kid. So she was never, Marta was never surprised that Jose turned around and did it to his kids.
Had you heard that before?
No.
I don't think I ever heard that before. And I like was frantically Googling it while watching to see if that was like a known thing in the case, and I couldn't find much.
Well, I mean, she says in the scene, you can never tell anyone this as long as my mother is alive. So I assumed that this woman has passed away and that Marta gave permission for it to be used in the show. Cause
yeah,
she has.
Could be.
She's dead now.
As much of a dick as Weisberg is, or as we're meant to think he is, his side eye, or I guess Edwards's side eye during Leslie's opening statement, is everything. I love her, but he's making some seriously dubious faces. Did you feel like he'd had something done to his eyebrows since we saw him last? It's
I didn't notice, but that wouldn't surprise me.
It's kind of an Instagram eyebrow. See also Harry Hamlin's ongoing uncomfortable faces, which he just isn't getting enough to do. And when he does, spoiler, it's not good. For his character, he's fine, but he's making the most of it, which is great. I wish he'd come into the series sooner. He livened it up for me for sure.
Yep. I agree. Just the last thing was in the epilogue, we find out that the final scene that we see of Leslie is she's coming home and there's a scrum of reporters outside and they're asking if she's really going to retire now that the case is over. And she says, "Yes, I'm going to spend time with my family. Maybe I'll open a toy store." And the epilogue gets a statement. It's like, she did work at a toy store for a while. Then she went back to work. So I just have in our notes, actually, fuck toy stores, Leslie.
Yeah, I would really love to see the shot clock on how long that lasted. Because
no kidding.
I'm just seeing her like litigating like a tug of war over a whatever raggedy and doll, being like, I went to law school. I don't need this shit. Bye.
Yep. Yeah, if Toys R Us can't make it work, Leslie is not going to be plugging away at Abramson's Amusements or whatever the fuck it was called.
But I would watch a show about that.
I would,
scripted
too,
or otherwise.
Yep.
But we're not getting one. First, let's do the aggravating factors. Stuff we thought less of in the episode. Which started really early on, like in the previously, is with the line from the otherwise absent from this episode, Jill Lansing, telling Leslie that she can't do another trial because her daughter has changed so much in the last 4 years. I do not recall this line from the original episode. Again, listeners, feel free to let us know if that was definitely a line.
Yeah, I didn't remember it either, but I'm less confident of my memory of those kinds of scenes, I guess.
I'm not 100% confident, but I feel like we spent a lot of time on that issue.
Yes, we did.
Episode, and that I would have remembered that phrasing. Like, I didn't even remember that outfit. It just looked like a reshoot, and I just don't get. I get it. Like, this is the water that they're leading us to drink from, but.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Like that was too much. And especially to redo it in the previouslys. Come on.
Yeah, I'm curious to know though whether, I mean, there's no way I could ever find out, but I wonder if these episodes were re-edited given current events to include more of the sexual abuse details and less of the working womanhood is hard stuff that they seem to have been leaning on more in the earlier episodes. I don't know.
Yeah, could have been.
Maybe. We also get a line from Leslie saying that Lyle and Eric's vulnerability makes them targets for all these lonely women. And I just want to say, I mean, I know it's true, obviously, like Lyle is on his second jailhouse marriage, but you never hear about this going the other way. Like, no one is lining up to marry a lady murderer. Like, women just, like, if a man has had his face ripped off by an alligator, like, a woman will still date him. Woman will date a head in a bed. Women don't care. that's male privilege for you. Anyway, that's
yeah, I was trying to think of a case that went the other way, and the only one I could come up with is absolutely the most famous one, which was Bambi Bembenek and her handsome boyfriend helping her escape and then writing one of the worst true crime books I have ever read. It was so bad I quit after six pages. Bad. That's bad.
Yep.
But yeah, women will date a head in a bed. And in the case of the Alcatraz guys, that's what they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
Paper mache head in a bed. yeah. In other bad dialogue news, we were promised, you know, a focus on the efforts by Garcetti and Weisberg to kind of to right the ship, I guess, in the LA courts. So we get this line from Mark Moses, bless his heart, as Garcetti: McMartin, Rodney King, and now OJ. This office is a laughingstock. Well, with that attitude, like, really? Like, just because Mark Moses can almost get away with it doesn't mean he should have to.
Right.
And I would have been interested to see just a little scene, 12 seconds, of something that approached collusion, but we didn't get any of that. Not that I wanted the series to go on any longer than it did, and we'll get into that in the verdict section, but
Yeah, I
don't know. That's probably on TV Guide, but that actually would have been a little more interesting to me than some of the foo-farah with Leslie and her husband. And speaking of whom, there's a scene, an extremely effective scene in court where Leslie is, whatever, Weisberg just undercuts her completely and basically, like, forces her, like, burns her with the jury, won't let her withdraw from the case, and forces her to turn her closing over to Barry Levin. The dialogue in the scene should not work. There's a lot of blunt force exposition in it, but this is another case where, or another instance where current events gave it another dimension. And I thought it was very effective and infuriating. And Leslie is rightly infuriated.
Yeah.
And is about to implode in the courtroom. She's so mad. But then we have to have another scene at home where she's ranting to her husband about what just happened in a way that I don't think a woman, they've been married a while, they would have a shorthand for this stuff. So it was clunky.
Yeah.
But also, as a woman myself, I don't need what just happened retold to me. I don't.
Yeah. Nope.
Because I live in the world. So that was too bad, because the scene was very effective. And then, and possibly because of everything that's been going on in the world, also because of the players, it was well done. But show, will you ever learn your strengths? Nope. Guess not.
Yeah. More bad writing was, immediately after that, Leslie goes back to the office and she's working with Barry on the closing that he now has to give. And he spontaneously has a nosebleed, says it's no big deal. She notices he's got bruises all over his forearms and he's like, I'll go see a doctor eventually. You know, I get tired sometimes. And in our notes, I put, please see a doctor, Barry. You obviously have leukemia. And I was just guessing and then Googled it. And he did have leukemia, although that was not his cause of death. But I just wanted to say I'm very good at watching TV, and or the person who wrote this episode is very unsubtle at writing it, because, duh, of course he has leukemia based on those three sentences.
And why, why did we even have to? Why did we even have to know that? Because Mr. Levin, may he rest, did not pass away until 2001. it was, let's say, related to this diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
But was this, y'all can Google it for yourselves. It was rather Baroque, his passing. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah.
But it did, like, it did nothing to move the plot. He, like, there was a little, like, Camille yeah. in the courtroom, but it's not like he, Tom Hanks in Philadelphia and was no longer there. Like, he completed yeah. his work. And on top of that, in the closing chyron, where you find out what happens to everybody, they just say that he died. He had a blood disorder and he passed away in 2001. Like, where are, you know, is this a backdoor spin off? Like, what are you doing?
I mean, we should say what actually happened so people don't have to Google it, I okay. guess. But he,
yes, in case you're driving.
Go ahead. You were the one who found the story.
Yes, he had some sort of checkup with his doctor in which he was told that his condition, which was a blood disorder, I think it's like leukemia, but not necessarily cancer,
right,
was considerably more serious than he had been told. So he drove to a national cemetery and shot himself in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. He apparently used to be a cop.
Yeah,
I think,
and a Marine. And, they said also.
Yeah, he had quite a storied career. And was only 54 years old when he passed away. So tough.
Hmm. Well, so let's lighten the mood by saying what we missed the most from this episode as we wrap things up.
Yes, our that's a tough one to follow, but let's try.
Yep.
This episode contained no Jerome Oziel, no Jerome Oziel's increasingly tall peak of wig, and no Judalon, and no Judalubes, and no Chiron about either of them.
Yes! Ugh, ew. I missed that too. God, they were the best.
They really were. I mean, look, webisodes, I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's time to wrap things up for real. With the verdict. Let's do episode and series. Tara, would you like to begin with your episode summation?
This was a satisfying way to close things up, but in terms of the whole season, I don't know that it needed to be 8 episodes. I feel like they could have gotten through a lot of this in 6. There were a lot of times when I would look at the time and think, oh, we must be almost done. And it was like, 35 after. I realized that the real case took place over like a half a decade, but I don't feel like the audience needed to feel that necessarily. And a lot of the story points were not like as dramatic as they were presented. Like some, they get into some really arcane shit. And I guess, you know, like I said, it took a long ass time. So I get it, but at the same time, like, tighten it up. Like, just give us a few, you know, screens with text on them, and then, like, 2 years have passed, blah, blah, blah. Like, just shorthand it, because it was pretty flabby, I felt. And you?
I agree. I think it would have been better at 6, but at the same time, I mean, I agree that it went out strong. I like this episode more than others in the back half.
Yeah,
I agree that it would have been good at 6 rather than 8. But as I said about some other project recently, this was both like too big and too small. Mm-hmm. And I think they needed to focus like even tighter on some smaller aspect of the trial, or have some other kind of organizing principle that was not all of it.
Yeah.
And if, in fact, their organizing principle was really that this was Leslie Abramson's story, then do that.
Yeah.
And if it's about her relationship with Eric, then do that. But they just needed to, I think, blinker it a little tighter.
Mm-hmm.
Might I suggest Jerome and Judalon? That would have been my choice.
Mm-hmm.
I would be interested to know if they, if the writers and showrunners would go back and do it differently.
Yeah.
If they had it to do again, given everything that we're learning in the last few weeks, and also the reception to this has been, I think, supportive, but not super positive. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated to see a lot of really wrong opinions from people on Twitter. And by people on Twitter, I primarily mean Deborah Messing, who are saying things like their reaction to the news about Kevin Spacey, for example, is like, isn't it funny? And she really has tweeted stuff like this. Isn't it interesting that, as you know, one person makes an accusation against Kevin Spacey and immediately he's believed? It's like, that is not the story of male sexual abuse victims of men. Like, this is not really relevant. It's not a case of male privilege. Like, survivors are survivors. It doesn't help anyone to pit them against each other. And I think a story like this, if they were starting to write it like next week, it would be so different. Like, it would just be such a different story, I think, in exactly the ways that you say. It would have a different focus. It would more strongly have to tell the abuse story, because like, that's the story, really. And I think, you know, you said earlier in this run of podcasts, like, you were more skeptical about the claims, you know, when the case was actually happening. And I have to think it's different for you now, not just from watching the show, but like just seeing, like, it really is an epidemic. Like, that doesn't feel like the wrong word to use. However many people you think are sexually abused, it's probably triple what you thought. Like, it's really, the cycle of abuse is real and pernicious, and it's not a story that's ever been told enough, including now.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't buy it at the time, because at the time was 30 years ago, and right, just from living in the world, I'm, you know, much more inclined to believe them, which I wouldn't say thanks to this series, but
right,
it did do an effective job, if nothing else, at telling their stories in a way that wasn't like tabloidy or driving past a car wrecky, like, mm-hmm, so often happens with this story, that
yeah,
it sympathized with them, but it also, I think, did, and very subtly, which is rare for this show, made it clear that you're not required to be perfect or even good to, you know, count, quote unquote, as a mm-hmm survivor, and deserve people's compassion for that, even if everything else you ever did was a disaster and you made wrong decisions.
Yeah.
That, you know, those are separate issues, and adults need to be able to weigh them both. So on that tip, well done, show, but you, yeah, still should, well, have not done only in that, six episodes.
Yeah. Just one last thing is that you know, we already mentioned the Marta story that she tells Leslie about Jose and his mother, but that we also hear from Kitty's sister that there was abuse in their household too. So it really is like Jose and Kitty were survivors too, and they didn't know what they were doing. Is the sort of the end of the story, and the real tragedy of it is that like people did not get help at many, many, many junctures of this story, not just Lyle and Eric, but their parents too. And
yeah, ban people, I guess.
Yeah,
mm-hmm, is the upshot of that.
Yeah, people are terrible.
Yeah, yeah, us foremost among them.
We're the worst.
No, we are the worst. Total monsters. All right. Well, next time on The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, the days of old Lang Syne, pretty much. We will see you with the assassination of Gianni Versace when American Crime Story returns in January 2018. Tara, thank you so much for taking this journey with me.
Stop.
You two listeners, you can admit The Blotter Presents to your social media circle at Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. This has been The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment. And until next year, we are adjourned.
The has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.